1 Timothy chapter 1 and verses 3 through 5 reads, "As I urged you when I was going to Macedonia, remain at Ephesus, so that you may charge certain persons not to teach any different doctrine, nor to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies, which promote speculation rather than stewardship from God, that is, by faith. The aim of our charge is love that issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and a sincere faith." Paul started the church of Ephesus on his second missionary journey. And on his third journey, he spent about 3 years with them. And the letter that we have in our Bibles, the church at Ephesus, helps us to see Paul's love for them and his desire for them to remember what it means to be united and to be a family of God. Truth is, churches don't always act like family. And Christians don't always love each other as they should. There are those who push things that should not be pushed on others. And so they teach things that will make them better Christians. But what happens when interpretation becomes the focus is the loss of love for fellow Christians. And then sometimes churches divide. When Paul was on his way back to Jerusalem, he believed that he would not see the brethren at Ephesus anymore. It was then that he called their church leaders to meet him at Miletus. And he told them here that they needed to beware because that there would be some folks in the future that will come to Ephesus, that they will teach things that twist the truth, to do it simply just to draw a group of followers around themselves. And it was about a decade or so after Paul's meeting with those elders at Ephesus that he writes this letter to Timothy. He tells Timothy what he left in Ephesus. He urged him in verses 3 and 4 to remain at Ephesus, that he was going on to Macedonia, that he was to charge certain persons not to teach a different doctrine, that they were not to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies, for those things promote speculation. We know that the church there at Ephesus received John's letter from Christ about 30 years after Timothy spent time there. In Revelations chapter 2, we see that the church had done well holding on to its doctrinal issues. But if you look in verses 4 and 5 of Revelation chapter 2, you find these words. Jesus says, "But I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Remember, therefore, where you have fallen, repent and do the works you did at first. If not, I will come to you and remove your lampstand from its place, unless you repent." What the church was suffering from at Ephesus was a love problem. And that love problem that they have and were suffering from was killing them spiritually. Paul was more than likely writing this letter to Timothy somewhere around 60-62 AD, sitting in a prison cell in Rome. And he uses this time to teach Timothy how to deal with and handle church problems. And it was apparent after you read a lot of these things that Ephesus and other churches that Timothy helped had some of the same common problems. One of the things that is evident, if most of us have ever been around problems within the church, that it is more often than not caused by a minority than a majority. And we simply judge churches by who is the most vocal. Churches often have vocal members who have respect and knowledge, but not always correct in their passionate teachings. Church leaders are often called upon to confront some people, primarily because what they teach is not correct or they becoming divisive. But not all of our problems are caused by the membership. There are even those who are seen as leaders to cause some of the problems too. But Paul jumps right in and he tells Timothy the problems in Ephesus, and that he, as a preacher, is going to have to tackle. Paul says those problems are doctrinal. There's a word that, you know, we think we have a grasp on, but sometimes it is a very difficult word to define, and that word is doctrine. It simply means teaching. And Paul doesn't so much define doctrine in the opening as he does what teaching a different doctrine looks like. The teachers there in Ephesus, they are teaching a different doctrine. They are devoted to myths and genealogies. They're wandering around in vain discussions. They teach with confidence the things that they do not understand. Now, the one thing that the Jews will have or won't have after the temple is destroyed is their genealogies. All of those were kept in the temple, and that problem would quickly resolve once that temple is burned down because their family history will be gone. Paul gives us the reason for the teachings of God, that teaching, and calls that teaching the law. It's not the Mosaic law, but it is God's eternal law. These laws were given to us to help us become more holy, to help us to become more like God and Christ alike. You look down in verses 8 through 11 in 1 Timothy chapter 1. Paul lists some things that are counter to God's eternal law. Now we know that the law is good if one uses it lawfully. But understand this: the law is not laid down for the just, but for the lawless and the disobedient, for the ungodly and the sinners, for the unholy and the profane, for those who strike their fathers and mothers, for the murderers, the sexually immoral, men who practice homosexuality, enslavers, liars, perjurers, and whatever else is contrary to sound doctrine, in accordance with the gospel of the glory of the blessed God with which I have entrusted. The question becomes, what do we do? It's not, will church leaders and other members preach a twisted gospel or push an agenda that is harmful to the body? No, the question is, what will the leaders and the members do when the local church is in conflict with one another? We must live the end goal. that the aim of what our Christian relationship is all about is what is coming at the very end, not what is happening right now. And the goal that we find is love. Verse 5 says, the aim of our charge is love. That issues from a pure heart and a good conscience and a severe faith. Have you ever heard of the phrase, fake it till you make it? It means that if we desire an attitude that is different than what we have now, we fake that attitude that we desire until it becomes a real attitude that we have. If I want to be a kinder, gentler person, but I am rough and crude, but that is my goal, then I will fake being a kind, gentler person until such time it becomes that within me. How many times have we been given a medication by a doctor and we are going to be taking it for a long time? How many times when we first start taking it do we say, I missed a dose. And then 2 or 3 months down, we don't miss anything. We know just by what time is on the clock that we have to take our medicine. The way we deal with those is we just keep faking it until it changes us and we become that what we want to be. Paul is teaching here is a real emotion. The end goal of this confrontation with these teachers who are disrupting the church is to have a church that is filled with love. True love. It is a threefold love that Paul lists here. A pure heart, a good conscience, and a sincere faith. Love from a pure heart is one that does not have any ulterior motives. It doesn't contain any sinful thoughts. It's not a love that we would use to manipulate someone else. A good example is if we were to sit down and read 1 Corinthians chapter 13. The love of a good conscience is one that focuses on a decision to do right versus doing wrong. Heart is based upon a thought-out process. In other words, why do you do what you do? And that love from a sincere faith is one in which the heart and the conscience are rooted. We desire for a fellow Christian who is caught up in sin to be free from that sin because our faith teaches us the reason sin is so wicked. Our message is not polluted with worldly things, but it is centering itself on Christ. That is what the message of a sincere faith, wrapped up in a pure heart and a good conscience. Put it this way. Do you love a fellow Christian that you disagree with from a pure heart in its motive, a good conscience in its decision making, and a faith free from the pollution of a self-serving interpretation? We have here in this auditorium, on the whole, a very close-knit family. But problems are going to come, regardless of how good that family is. And we need to remind ourselves if we will be part of the problem or part of the solution. We're going to have strong opinions that we're going to express. We're probably going to have strong opinions that we're not going to even say. At least not to the group. We might say it to somebody afterwards, though. What is our motive? The end goal is to love one another, regardless of our problems. What does our love look like towards others in this auditorium? Even if those are not present here today. It is here that God calls on us to examine it, not just to the doctrine that we hold on to, but the love that expresses that doctrine. And it should be our prayer each and every day that we live a life based upon the end goal of love. God sent His Son to this earth for one reason and one reason only, to save it. He didn't come here to destroy it, but to save it. And to save it, He put His Son up there on that cross to die for each and every one of us. And everyone on the face of the earth has the opportunity to respond to that gospel. There is no one on the face of this earth that is without an example of God in this world. God has revealed Himself to the whole world through His creation. And if we choose not to respond, our end goal will not be where we want to be. If you're not a Christian tonight, we want to give you the opportunity to obey the gospel, to become that child of God. Have the angels in heaven rejoice. Today's the day. What will you do with Jesus? Maybe you are a Christian. Maybe you need to receive mercy from our Father in heaven to be forgiven for a sin that you may have committed. If it's something that you need to do in a public way, we want to give you that opportunity also. Won't you come as together we stand and we sing.